Ansel. Selena read the letter 3 times to make sure she hadn't missed something. She was being let go. But why? She had the letter of approval, at least, but what had she done that made it so urgent to get rid of her, that he'd drug her and then dump her in the middle of the desert? She had 5 days left. He couldn't have waited for her to leave. Her eyes burned as she sorted through the events of the past few days for ways she might have offended the master. She got to her feet and rifled through the saddlebags until she pulled out the letter of approval. It was a folded square of paper, sealed with sea-green wax, the color of the master's eyes. A little vain, but... Her fingers hovered over the seal. If she broke it, then Aerobin might accuse her of tampering with the letter. But what if it said horrid things about her? Ansel said it was a letter of approval, so it couldn't be that bad. Selena tucked the letter back into the saddlebag. Perhaps the master had also realized that she was spoiled and selfish. Maybe everyone had just been tolerating her, and maybe they'd heard of her fight with Ansel and decided to send her packing. It wouldn't surprise her. They were looking out for their own, after all. Never mind that for a while, she had felt like one of their own. Felt, for the first time in a long, long while, like she had a place where she belonged, where she might learn something more than deceit and how to end lives. But she'd been wrong. Somehow, realizing that hurt far worse than the beating Aerobin had given her. Her lips trembled, but she squared her shoulders and scanned the night sky until she found the stag and the crowning star that led north. Sighing, Selena blew out the lantern, mounted Cassita, and rode into the night. She rode toward Xandria, opting to find a ship there instead of braving the northern trek across the Singing Sands to Yerpa, the port she'd originally sailed into. Without a guide, she didn't really have much of a choice. She took her time, often walking instead of riding Cassita, who seemed as sad as she was to leave the Silent Assassins and their luxurious stables. The next day, she was a few miles into her late afternoon trek when she heard the thump, thump, thump. It grew louder. The movements now edged with clashing and clattering and deep voices. She hopped onto Casita's back and crested a dune. In the distance, at least 200 men were marching straight into the desert. Some bore red and black banners. Lord Barrack's men. They marched in a long column, with mounted soldiers galloping along the flanks. Though she had never seen Barrack, a quick examination of the host showed no signs of a lord being present. He must have stayed behind. But there was nothing out here. Nothing except for... Selena's mouth went dry. Nothing except for the assassin's fortress. A mounted soldier paused his riding, his black mare's coat gleaming with sweat. He stared toward her. With her white clothes concealing all of her but her eyes, he had no way of identifying her. No way of telling what she was. Even from the distance, she could see the bow and quiver of the arrows he bore. How good was his aim? She didn't dare to move. The last thing she needed was the attention of all those soldiers on her. They all possessed broadswords, daggers, shields, and arrows. This definitely wasn't going to be a friendly visit, not with this many men. Was that why the master had sent her away? Had he somehow known this would happen and didn't want her caught up in it? Selena nodded to the soldier and continued riding toward Xandria. If the master didn't want anything to do with her, then she certainly didn't need to warn them, especially since he probably knew. And he had a fortress full of assassins. 200 soldiers were nothing compared to 70 or so of the Sezzi's Sucast. The assassins could handle themselves. They didn't need her. They'd made that clear enough. Still, the muffled thump of Cassita's steps away from the fortress became more and more difficult to bear. The next morning, Xandria was remarkably quiet. At first, Selena thought it was because the citizens were all waiting for news about the attack on the assassins. But she soon realized she found it quiet because she had only seen it on market day. The winding, narrow streets that had been crammed with vendors were now empty, littered with errant palm fronds and piles of sand that slithered in the fierce winds from the sea. She bought passage on a ship that would sail to Amir, the port in Melisande across the Gulf of Oro. She had hoped for a ship to Inish, another port, so she could inquire after a young reader she'd met on her journey here. But there were none. And with the embargo on ships from Xandria going to other parts of Otterland's empire, a distant, forgotten port like Amir would be her best bet. From there, she'd travel on Cassita back to Rifthold, hopefully catching another boat somewhere on the long arm of the Avery River that would take her the last leg to the capital. The ship didn't leave until high tide that afternoon, which left Selena with a few hours to wander the city. The spider silk merchant was long gone, along with the cobbler and the temple priestesses. Nervous the mare would be identified in the city, but more worried that someone would steal Cassita if she left her unguarded, Selena led the horse through back alleys until she found a near private trough for Cassita. Selena leaned against a sandstone wall as her horse drank her fill. Had Lord Beric's men reached the fortress yet? At the rate they were going, they would probably arrive this night or early tomorrow morning. She just hoped the master was prepared, and that he had at least restocked the flaming wall after the last attack from Beric. Had he sent her away for her own safety? Or was he about to be blindsided? She glanced up at the palace towering over the city. Beric hadn't been with his men. Delivering the Mute Master's head to the King of Otterland would surely get the embargo lifted from his city. Was he doing it for the sake of his people? Or for himself? But the Red Desert also needed the assassins, and the money and the trade the foreign emissaries brought in too. Beric and the Master had certainly been communicating in the past few weeks. What had gone wrong? Ansel had made another trip a week ago to see him, and hadn't mentioned trouble. She'd seemed quite jovial, actually. Selena didn't really know why a chill snaked down her spine in that moment, or why she found herself suddenly digging through the saddlebags until she pulled out the master's letter of approval, along with the note Ansel had written her. If the master had known about the attack, he would have been fortifying his defenses already. He wouldn't have sent Selena away. She was Otterland's greatest assassin, and if 200 men were marching on his fortress, he'd need her. The master wasn't proud, not like Aerobin. He truly loved his disciples. He looked after and nurtured them. But he'd never trained Ansel. Why? And with so many of his loved ones in the fortress, why send only Selena away? Why not send them all? Her heart beat so fast it stumbled, and Selena tore open the letter of approval. It was blank. She flipped the paper over. The other side was also blank. Holding it up to the sun revealed no hidden ink, no watermark. But it had been sealed by him, hadn't it? That was his seal on the... It was easy to steal a signet ring. She'd done it with Captain Rolf. And she'd seen the white line around the master's finger. His ring had been missing. But if Ansel had drugged her and given her a document sealed with the master's signet ring... No, it wasn't possible, and it didn't make sense. Why would Ansel send her away and pretend the master had done it? Unless... Selena looked up at Lord Beric's palace. Unless Ansel hadn't been visiting Lord Beric on behalf of the master at all. Or maybe she had at first, long enough to gain the master's trust. But while the master thought she was mending the relationships between them, Ansel was really doing quite the opposite, and that spider silk merchant had mentioned something about a spy among the assassins. A spy working for Beric. But why? Selena didn't have time to ponder it, not with 200 men so close to the fortress. She might have questioned Lord Beric, but that too would take precious time. One warrior might not make a difference against 200, but she was Selena Sardothian. That had to count for something. That did count for something. So she mounted Cassita and turned her toward the city gates. "Let's see how fast you can run," she whispered into the mare's ear, and took off. Chapter 11. Like a shooting star across a red sky, Cassita flew over the dunes and made the jump across the cleaver as if she were leaping over a brook. They paused only long enough for the horse to rest and fill up on water. And though Selena apologized to the mare for pushing her so hard, Cassita never faltered. She, too, seemed to sense the urgency. They rode through the night until the crimson dawn broke over the dunes and smoke stained the sky, and the fortress spread before them. Fires burned here and there, and shouts rang out, along with the clashing of weapons. The assassins hadn't yielded yet, though their walls had been breached. A few bodies littered the sand leading up to the gates, but the gates themselves showed no sign of a forced entry, as if someone had left them unlocked. Selena dismounted Cassita before the final dune, leaving the horse to either follow or find her own path, and crept the rest of the way into the fortress. She paused long enough to swipe a sword from a dead soldier and tuck it into her belt. It was cheaply made and unbalanced, but the point was sharp enough to do the job. From the muffled clopping of hooves behind her, she knew Cassita had followed. Still, Selena didn't dare take her eyes away from the scene before her as she drew her two long daggers. Inside the walls, bodies were everywhere, assassin and soldier alike. Otherwise, the main courtyard was empty, its little rivers now flowing red. She tried her best not to look too closely at the faces of the fallen. Fires smoldered, most of them just smoking piles of ash. Charred remnants of arrows revealed that they'd probably been ablaze when they hit. Every step into the courtyard felt like a lifetime. The shouts and clanging weapons came from other parts of the fortress. Who was winning? If all the soldiers had gotten in with so few dead on the sand, then someone had to have let them in, probably in the dead of night. How long had it taken before the night watch spotted the soldiers creeping inside? Unless the night watch had been dispatched before they could sound the alarm. But, as Selena took step after step, she realized that the question she should be asking was far worse. Where's the master? That was what Lord Beric had wanted. The master's head. And Ansel. Selena didn't want to finish that thought. Ansel hadn't sent her away because of this. Ansel couldn't be behind this. But Selena started sprinting for the master's greeting room, heedless of the noise. Blood and destruction were everywhere. She passed courtyards full of soldiers and assassins, locked in deadly battle. She was halfway up the stairs to the master's room when a soldier came rushing down them, his blade drawn. She ducked the blow for her head and struck low and deep, her long dagger burying itself into his gut. With the heat, the soldiers had forgone metal armor, and their leather armor couldn't turn a blade made with Otterlanian steel. She jumped aside as he groaned and tumbled down the steps. She didn't bother sparing him a final look as she continued her ascent. The upper level was completely silent. Her breath sharp in her throat, she careened toward the open doors of the greeting room. The 200 soldiers were meant to destroy the fortress and provide a distraction. The master could have been unguarded with everyone focused on the attack. But he was still the master. How could Ansel expect to best him? Unless she used that drug on him as well. How else would she be able to disarm him and catch him unawares? Selena hurled herself through the open wooden doors and nearly tripped on the body prostrate between them. Mikhail lay on his back, his throat slit, eyes staring up at the tiled ceiling. Dead. Beside him was Ilias, struggling to rise as he clutched his bleeding belly. Selena bit back her cry, and Ilias raised his head, blood dripping from his lips. She made to kneel beside him, but he grunted, pointing to the room ahead. To his father. The master lay on his side atop the dais, his eyes open and his robe still unstained by blood. But he had the stillness of one drugged, paralyzed by whatever Ansel had given him. The girl stood over him, her back to Selena as she talked, swift and quiet, babbling. She she clenched her father's sword in one hand, the bloodied blade drooping toward the floor. The master's eyes shifted to Selena's face, then to his son. They were filled with pain. Not for himself, but for Ilias, for his bleeding boy. He looked back to Selena's face, his sea-green eyes now pleading. "Save my son." Ansel took a deep breath, and the sword rose in the air, making to slice off the master's head. Selena had a heartbeat to flip the knife in her hands. She cocked her wrist and let it fly. The dagger slammed into Ansel's forearm, exactly where Selena had aimed. Ansel let out a cry, her finger splaying. Her father's sword clattered to the ground. Her face went white with shock as she whirled, clutching the bleeding wound. But the expression shifted into something dark and unyielding as she beheld Selena. Ansel scrambled for her fallen blade. But Selena was already running. Ansel grabbed her sword, dashing back to the master and lifting it high over her head. She plunged the sword toward the master's neck. Selena managed to tackle her before the blade struck, sending them both crashing to the floor. Cloth and steel and bone, twisting and rolling. She brought her legs up high enough to kick Ansel. The girls split apart, and Selena was on her feet the moment she stopped moving. But Ansel was already standing, her sword still in her hands, still between Selena and the paralyzed master. The blood from Ansel's arm dripped to the floor. They panted, and Selena steadied her reeling head. "Don't do it," she breathed. Ansel let out a low laugh. "I thought I told you to go home." Selena drew the sword from her belt. If only she had a blade like Ansel's, not some bit of scrap metal. It shook in her hands as she realized who, exactly, stood between her and the master. Not some nameless soldier, not some stranger, or a person she'd been hired to kill, but Ansel.
"Why?"
Selena whispered. Ansel cocked her head, raising her sword a bit higher. "Why?" Selena had never seen anything more hideous than the hate that twisted Ansel's face. "Because Lord Beric promised me 1,000 men to march into the Flatlands. That's why. Stealing those horses was exactly the public excuse he needed to attack this fortress. And all I had to do was take care of the guards and leave the gate open last night. And bring him this." She gestured with her sword to the master behind her. "The master's head." She ran an eye up and down Selena's body, and Selena hated herself for trembling further.
"Put down your sword, Selena."
Selena didn't move.
"Go to hell."
Ansel chuckled.
"I've been to hell. I spent some time there when I was 12, remember? And when I march into the Flatlands with Beric's troops, I'll see to it that High King Locke sees a bit of hell, too. But first..."
She turned to the master, and Selena sucked in a breath.
"Don't,"
Selena said. From this distance, Ansel would kill him before she could do anything to stop her.
"Just look the other way, Selena."
Ansel stepped closer to the man.
"If you touch him, I'll put this sword through your neck," Selena snarled.
The words shook, and she blinked away the building moisture in her eyes. Ansel looked over her shoulder.
"I don't think you will."
Ansel took another step closer to the master, and Selena's second dagger flew. It grazed the side of Ansel's armor, leaving a long mark before it clattered to a stop at the foot of the dais. Ansel paused, giving Selena a faint smile.
"You missed."
"Don't do it."
"Why?" Selena put a hand over her heart, tightly gripping her sword with the other.
"Because I know what it feels like."
She dared another step.
"Because I know how it feels to have that kind of hate, Ansel. I know how it feels.
And this isn't the way."
"This?"
she said louder, gesturing to the fortress and all the corpses in it, all the soldiers and assassins still fighting.
"This is not the way."
"Says the assassin,"
Ansel spat.
"I've become an assassin because I had no choice."
"But you have a choice, Ansel.
You've always had a choice. Please don't kill him."
Please don't make me kill you, was what she truly meant to say. Ansel shut her eyes. Selena steadied her wrist, testing the balance of her blade, trying to get a sense of its weight. When Ansel opened her eyes, there was little of the girl she'd grown to care for over the past month.
These men, Ansel said,
her sword rising higher.
These men destroy everything.
I know.
You know, and yet you do nothing! You're just a dog chained to your master.
She closed the distance between them, her sword lowering. Selena almost sagged with relief, but didn't lighten her grip on her own blade. Ansel's breathing was ragged.
You could come with me.
She brushed back a strand of Selena's hair.
The two of us alone could conquer the Flatlands. And with Lord Beric's troops.
Her hand grazed Selena's cheek, and Selena tried not to recoil at the touch and at the words that came out of Ansel's mouth.
I would make you my right hand. We'd take the Flatlands back.
I can't, Selena answered. Even though she could see Ansel's plan with perfect clarity, even if it was tempting. Ansel stepped back.
What does Rifthold have that's so special? How long will you bow and scrape for that monster?
I can't go with you, and you know it. So take your troops and leave, Ansel. She watched the expressions flitter across Ansel's face. Hurt, denial, rage.
So be it, Ansel said.
She struck, and Selena only had time to tilt her head to dodge the hidden dagger that shot out of Ansel's wrist. The blade grazed her cheek, and blood warmed her face. Her face. Ansel swiped with her sword, so close that Selena had to flip herself backward. She landed on her feet, but Ansel was fast and near enough that Selena could only bring up her blade. Their swords met. Selena spun, shoving Ansel's sword from hers. Ansel stumbled, and Selena used the moment to gain the advantage, striking again and again. Ansel's superior blade was hardly impacted. They passed the prostrate master and the dais. Selena dropped to the ground, swiping at Ansel with a leg. Ansel leapt back, dodging the blow. Selena used the precious seconds to snatch her fallen dagger from where it lay on the dais steps. When Ansel struck again, she met the crossed blades of Selena's sword and dagger. Ansel let out a low laugh.
How do you imagine this ending?
She pressed Selena's blades.
Or is it a fight to the death?
Selena braced her feet against the floor. She'd never known Ansel was so strong, or so much taller than her. And Ansel's armor, how would she get through that? There was a joint between the armpit and the ribs, and then around her neck.
You tell me, Selena said.
The blood from her cheek slid down her throat.
You seem to have everything planned.
I tried to protect you. Ansel shoved hard against Selena's blades, but not strongly enough to dislodge them.
And you came back anyway.
You call that protection? Drugging me and leaving me in the desert? Selena bared her teeth. But before she could launch another assault, Ansel struck with her free hand, right across the X made by their weapons, her fist slamming between Selena's eyes. Selena's head snapped back, the world flashing, and she landed hard on her knees. Her sword and dagger clattered to the floor. Ansel was on her in a second, her bloodied arm across Selena's chest, the other hand pressing the edge of her sword against Selena's unmarred cheek.
Give me one reason not to kill you right here,
Ansel whispered into her ear, kicking away Selena's sword. Her fallen dagger still lay near them, just out of reach. Selena struggled, trying to put some distance between Ansel's sword and her face.
Oh, how vain can you be?
Ansel said, and Selena winced as the sword dug into her skin.
Afraid I'll scar your face?
Ansel angled the sword downward, the blade now biting into Selena's throat.
What about your neck?
Stop it.
I didn't want it to end this way between us. I didn't want you to be a part of this.
Selena believed her. If Ansel wanted to kill her, she would have done it already. If she wanted to kill the master, she would have done that already, too.
And all of this waffling between sadistic hate and passion and regret.
You're insane, Selena said.
Ansel snorted.
Who killed Mikhail? Selena demanded. Anything to keep her talking, to keep her focused on herself.
Because just a few feet away lay her dagger.
I did, Ansel said.
A little of the fierceness faded from her voice.
Her back pressed against Ansel's chest. Selena couldn't be sure without seeing Ansel's face, but she could have sworn the swords were tinged with remorse.
When Beric's men attacked, I made sure that I was the one who notified the master.
The fool didn't sniff once at the water jug he drank from before he went to the gates. But then Mikhail figured out what I was doing and burst in here.
Too late to stop the master from drinking, though.
And then Ilias just got in the way.
Selena looked at Ilias, who still lay on the ground, still breathing.
The master watched his son, his eyes wide and pleading. If someone didn't staunch Ilias's bleeding, he'd die soon.
The master's fingers twitched slightly, making a curving motion.
How many others did you kill? Selena asked, trying to keep Ansel distracted as the master made the motion again.
A kind of slow, strange wriggling.
Only them, and the three on the night watch. I let the soldiers do the rest.
The master's finger twisted and slithered, like a snake.
One strike, that was all it would take,
just like the asp.
Ansel was fast. Selena had to be faster.
You know what, Ansel?
Selena breathed, memorizing the motions she'd have to make in the next few seconds, imagining her muscles moving, praying not to falter, to stay focused.
Ansel pressed the edge of the blade into Selena's throat.
What, Selena?
You want to know what the master taught me during all those lessons? She felt Ansel tense, felt the question distract her.
It was all the opportunity she needed.
This!
Selena twisted, slamming her shoulder into Ansel's torso.
Her bones connected against the armor with a jarring thud, and the sword cut into Selena's neck. But Ansel lost her balance and teetered back.
Selena hit Ansel's fingers so hard they dropped the sword right into Selena's waiting hand.
In a flash, like a snake turning in on itself, Selena pinned Ansel face down on the ground,
her father's sword now pressed against the back of her neck.
Selena hadn't realized how silent the room was until she was kneeling there,
one knee holding Ansel to the ground, the other braced on the floor.
Blood seeped from where the sword tip rested against Ansel's tan neck, redder than her hair.
Don't do it,
Ansel whispered, in that voice that she'd so often heard, that girlish, carefree voice. But had it always been a performance?
Selena pushed harder, and Ansel sucked in a breath, closing her eyes. Selena tightened her grip on the sword, willing steel into her veins.
Ansel should die. For what she'd done, she deserved to die.
And not just for all those assassins lying dead around them, but also for the soldiers who'd spent their lives for her agenda, and even for Selena herself, who, even as she knelt there, felt her heart breaking. Even if she didn't put the sword through Ansel's neck, she'd still lose her. She'd already lost her. But maybe the world had lost Ansel long before today.
Selena couldn't stop her lips from trembling as she asked,
"Was it ever real?"
Ansel opened an eye, staring at the far wall.
There were some moments when it was.
The moment I sent you away, it was real. Selena reined in her sob and took a long, steadying breath.
Slowly,
she lifted the sword from Ansel's neck, only a fraction of an inch.
Ansel made to move, but Selena pressed the steel against her skin again, and she went still.
From outside came cries of victory and concern, in voices that sounded hoarse from disuse.
The assassins had won. How long before they got here? If they saw Ansel,
saw what she had done, they'd kill her.
You have 5 minutes to pack your things and leave the fortress,
Selena said quietly. Because in 20 minutes,
I'm going up to the battlements, and I'm going to fire an arrow at you. And you'd better hope that you're out of range by then, because if you're not, that arrow is going straight through your neck. Selena lifted the sword. Ansel slowly got to her feet, but didn't flee. It took Selena a heartbeat to realize she was waiting for her father's sword. Selena looked at the wolf-shaped hilt and the blood staining the steel. The one tie Ansel had left to her father, her family, and whatever twisted shred of hope burned in her heart. Selena turned the blade and handed it hilt first to Ansel. The girl's eyes were damp as she took the sword. She opened her mouth, but Selena cut her off. Go home, Ansel. Ansel's face went white again. She sheathed the sword at her side. She glanced at Selena only once before she took off at a sprint, leaping over Mikhail's corpse as if he were nothing more than a bit of debris. Then she was gone.
Chapter 12. Selena rushed to Ilias, who moaned as she turned him over. The wound in his stomach was still bleeding. She ripped strips from her tunic, which was already soaked with blood, and shouted for help as she bound him tightly. There was a scrape of cloth on stone, and Selena looked over her shoulder to see the master trying to drag himself across the stones to his son. The paralytic must be wearing off. 5 bloodied assassins came rushing up the stairs, eyes wide and faces pale as they beheld Mikhail and Ilias. Selena left Ilias in their care as she dashed to the master. Don't move, she told him, wincing as blood from her face dripped onto his white clothes. You might hurt yourself. She scanned the podium for any sign of the poison and rushed to the fallen bronze goblet. A few sniffs revealed that the wine had been laced with a small amount of gloriella, just enough to paralyze him, not kill him. Ansel must have wanted him completely prone before she killed him. She must have wanted him to know she was the one who had betrayed him, to have him conscious while she severed his head. How had he not noticed it before he drank? Perhaps he wasn't as humble as he seemed. Perhaps he'd been arrogant enough to believe that he was safe here. It'll wear off soon, she told the master. But she still called for an antidote to speed up the process. One of the assassins took off at a run. She sat by the master, one hand clutching her bleeding neck. The assassins at the other end of the room carried Ilias out, stopping to reassure the master that his son would be fine. Selena nearly groaned with relief at that, but straightened as a dry, calloused hand wrapped around hers, squeezing faintly. She looked down into the face of the master, whose eyes shifted to the open door. He was reminding her of the promise she'd made. Ansel had been given 20 minutes to clear the firing range. It was time. Ansel was already a dark blur in the distance, hissily galloping as if demons were biting at her hooves. She was heading northwest over the dunes, toward the Singing Sands, to the narrow bridge of feral jungle that separated the deserted land from the rest of the continent, and then the open expanse of the western wastes beyond them, toward Briar Cliff. Atop the battlements, Selena drew an arrow from her quiver and knocked it into her bow. The bowstring moaned as she pulled it back, farther and farther, her arm straining. Focusing upon the tiny figure atop the dark horse, Selena took aim. In the silence of the fortress, the bowstring twanged like a mournful harp. The arrow soared, turning relentlessly. The red dunes passed beneath in a blur, closing the distance. A sliver of winged darkness edged with steel. A quick, bloody death. Hisley's tail flicked to the side as the arrow buried itself in the sand just inches behind her rear hooves. But Ansel didn't dare look over her shoulder. She kept riding, and she did not stop. Selena lowered her bow and watched until Ansel disappeared beyond the horizon. One arrow. That had been her promise. But she'd also promised Ansel that she had 20 minutes to get out of range. Selena had fired after 21.
The master called Selena to his chamber the following morning. It had been a long night, but Ilias was on the mend, the wound having narrowly missed puncturing any organs. All of Lord Beric's soldiers were dead, and were in the process of being carted back to Xandria, as a reminder to Beric to seek the King of Otterland's approval elsewhere. 20 assassins had died, and a heavy mourning silence filled the fortress. Selena sat on an ornately carved wooden chair, watching the master as he stared out the window at the sky. She nearly fell out of her seat when he began speaking.
"I am glad you did not kill Ansel."
His voice was raw, and his accent thick with the clipped yet rolling sounds of some language she'd never heard before.
"I have been wondering when she would decide what to do with her fate."
"So you knew." The master turned from the window.
"I have known for years. Several months after Ansel's arrival, I sent inquiries to the Flatlands. Her family had not written her any letters, and I was worried that something might have happened."
He took a seat in a chair across from Selena.
"My messenger returned to me some months later, saying that there was no Briar Cliff. The lord and his eldest daughter had been murdered by the High King, and the youngest daughter, Ansel, was missing."
"Why didn't you ever confront her?" Selena touched the narrow scab on her left cheek. It wouldn't scar if she looked after it properly. And if it did scar, then maybe she'd hunt down Ansel and return the favor.
"Because I hoped she would eventually trust me enough to tell me. I had to give her that chance, even though it was a risk. I hoped she would learn to face her pain, that she'd learn to endure it."
He smiled sadly at Selena.
"If you can learn to endure pain, you can survive anything. Some people learn to embrace it, to love it. Some endure it through drowning it in sorrow, or by making themselves forget. Others turn it into anger. But Ansel let her pain become hate, and let it consume her until she became something else entirely. A person I don't think she ever wished to be."
Selena absorbed his words, but set them aside for consideration at a later time. "Are you going to tell everyone about what she did?"
"No. I would spare them that anger. Many believed Ansel was their friend, and part of me, too, believes that at times she was."
Selena looked at the floor, wondering what to do with the ache in her chest. Would turning it into rage, as he said, help her endure it?
"For what it is worth, Selena,"
he rasped.
"I believe you were the closest thing to a friend Ansel has ever allowed herself to have. And I think she sent you away because she truly cared for you."
She hated her mouth for wobbling. "That doesn't make it hurt any less."
"I didn't think it would. But I think you will leave a lasting imprint on Ansel's heart. You spared her life and returned her father's sword. She will not soon forget that. And maybe when she makes her next move to reclaim her title, she will remember the assassin from the north and the kindness you showed her, and try to leave fewer bodies in her wake."
He walked to a latticework hutch, as if he were giving her the time to regain her composure, and pulled out a letter. By the time he returned to her, Selena's eyes were clear.
"When you give this to your master, hold your head high."
She took the letter, her recommendation. It seemed inconsequential in the face of everything that had just happened. "How is it that you're speaking to me now? I thought your vow of silence was eternal." He shrugged.
"The world seems to think so, but as far as my memory serves me, I've never officially sworn to be silent. I choose to be silent most of the time, and I've become so used to it that I often forget I have the capacity for speech. But there are some times when words are necessary, when explanations are needed that mere gestures cannot convey."
She nodded,
trying her best to hide her surprise. After a pause, the master said,
If you ever want to leave the north, you will always have a home here. I promise you the winter months are far better than the summer. And I think my son would be rather happy if you decided to return too.
He chuckled, and Selena blushed. He took her hand.
When you leave tomorrow, you'll be accompanied by a few of my people.
Why?
Because they will be needed to drive the wagon to Xandria. I know that you are indentured to your master, that you still owe him a good deal of money before you are free to live your own life. He's making you pay back a fortune that he forced you to borrow.
He squeezed her hand before approaching one of three trunks pushed against the wall.
For saving my life, and sparing hers.
He flipped open the lid of a trunk, then another, and another. Sunlight gleamed on the gold inside, reflecting through the room like light on water. All that gold, and the piece of spider silk that the merchant had given her? She couldn't think of the possibilities that wealth would open to her. Not right now.
When you give your master his letter, also give him this, and tell him that in the Red Desert, we do not abuse our disciples.
Selena smiled slowly. I think I can manage that. She looked to the open window, to the world beyond. For the first time in a long while, she heard the song of a northern wind calling her home, and she was not afraid. The Assassin and the Underworld. Chapter 1. The cavernous entrance hall of the Assassin's Keep was silent as Selena Sardothian stalked across the marble floor, a letter clutched between her fingers. No one had greeted her at the towering oak doors save the housekeeper, who'd taken her rain-sodden cloak and, after getting a look at the wicked grin on Selena's face, opted not to say anything. The doors to Aerobin Hommel's study lay at the other end of the hall and were currently shut. But she knew he was in there. Wesley, his bodyguard, stood watch outside, dark eyes unreadable as Selena strode toward him. Though Wesley wasn't officially an assassin, she had no doubt that he could wield the blades and daggers strapped to his massive body with deadly skill. She also had no doubt that Aerobin had eyes at every gate in this city. The moment she'd stepped into Rifthold, he'd been alerted that she'd at last returned. She trailed mud from her wet, filthy boots as she made her way toward the study doors and Wesley. It had been 3 months since the night Aerobin had beaten her unconscious, punishment for ruining his slave trade agreement with the pirate lord Captain Rolf. It had been 3 months since he'd shipped her off to the Red Desert to learn obedience and discipline, and to earn the approval of the mute master of the Silent Assassins. The letter clutched in her hand was proof that she had done it, proof that Aerobin hadn't broken her that night. And she couldn't wait to see the look on his face when she gave it to him. Not to mention when she told him about the 3 trunks of gold she'd brought with her, which were on their way up to her room at this moment. With a few words, she'd explain that her debt to him was now repaid, that she was going to walk out of the keep and move into the new apartment she'd purchased, that she was free of him. Selena reached the other end of the hall, and Wesley stepped in front of the study doors. He looked about 5 years younger than Aerobin, and the slender scars on his face and hands suggested that the life he'd spent serving the King of Assassins hadn't been easy. She suspected there were more scars beneath his dark clothing, perhaps brutal ones.
He's busy,
said Wesley, his hands hanging loosely at his sides, ready to reach for his weapons. She might be Aerobin's protege, but Wesley had always made it clear that if she became a threat to his master, he wouldn't hesitate to end her. She didn't need to see him in action to know he'd be an interesting opponent. She supposed that was why he did his training in private, and kept his personal history a secret, too. The less she knew about him, the more advantage Wesley would have if that fight ever came. Clever. And flattering, she supposed. Nice to see you too, Wesley, she said, flashing him a smile. He tensed, but didn't stop her as she strode past him and flung open the doors of Aerobin's study. The King of Assassins was seated at his ornate desk, poring over the stack of papers before him. Without so much as a hello, Selena strode right up to the desk and tossed the letter onto the shining wooden surface. She opened her mouth, the words near bursting out of her. But Aerobin merely lifted a finger, smiling faintly, and returned to his papers. Wesley shut the doors behind her. Selena froze. Aerobin flipped the page, rapidly scanning whatever document was in front of him, and made a vague wave with his hand. Sit. With his attention still on the document he was reading, Aerobin picked up the Mute Master's letter of approval and set it atop a nearby stack of papers. Selena blinked. Once. Twice. He didn't look up at her. He just kept reading. The message was clear enough. She was to wait until he was ready. And until then, even if she screamed until her lungs burst, he wouldn't acknowledge her existence. So Selena sat down. Rain plinked against the windows of the study. Seconds passed. Then minutes. Her plans for a grand speech with sweeping gestures faded into silence. Aerobin read three other documents before he even picked up the Mute Master's letter. And as he read it, she could only think of the last time she'd sat in this chair. She looked at the exquisite red carpet beneath her feet. Someone had done a splendid job of getting all the blood out. How much of the blood on the carpet had been hers? And how much of it had belonged to Sam Cortland, her rival and co-conspirator in the destruction of Aerobin's slave agreement? She still didn't know what Aerobin had done to him that night. When she'd arrived just now, she hadn't seen Sam in the entrance hall. But then again, she hadn't seen any of the other assassins who lived here. So maybe Sam was busy. She hoped he was busy, because that would mean he was alive. Aerobin finally looked at her, setting aside the Mute Master's letter as if it were nothing more than a scrap of paper. She kept her back straight and her chin upheld, even as Aerobin's silver eyes scanned every inch of her. They lingered the longest on the narrow pink scar across the side of her neck, inches away from her jaw and ear.
Well, Aerobin said at last, I thought you'd be Tanner.
She almost laughed, but she kept a tight rein on her features.
Head-to-toe clothes to avoid the sun, she explained.
Her words were quieter, weaker than she wanted. The first words she'd spoken to him since he'd beaten her into oblivion. They weren't exactly satisfying.
Ah,
he said, his long, elegant fingers twisting a golden ring around his forefinger. She sucked in a breath through her nose, remembering all that she'd been burning to say to him these past few months and during the journey back to Rifthold. A few sentences, and it would be over. More than 8 years with him, finished with a string of words and a mountain of gold. She braced herself to begin, but Aerobin spoke first.
I'm sorry,
he said.
Yet again, the words vanished from her lips.
His eyes were intent on hers, and he stopped toying with his ring.
If I could take back that night, Selena, I would.
He leaned over the edge of the desk, his hands now forming fists. The last time she'd seen those hands, they'd been smeared with her blood.
I'm sorry,
Aerobin repeated. He was nearly 20 years her senior, and though his red hair had a few strands of silver, his face remained young. Elegant, sharp features, blazingly clear gray eyes. He might not have been the handsomest man she'd ever seen, but he was one of the most alluring.
Every day,
he went on.
Every day since you left, I've gone to the Temple of Kiva to pray for forgiveness.
She might have snorted at the idea of the King of the Assassins kneeling before a statue of the God of Atonement, but his words were so raw. Was it possible that he actually regretted what he had done?
I shouldn't have let my temper get the better of me. I shouldn't have sent you away.
Then why didn't you retrieve me? It was out before she had a chance to control the snap in her voice. Aerobin's eyes narrowed slightly. As close to a wince as he'd let himself come, she supposed.
With the time it'd take for the messengers to track you down, you probably would have been on your way home anyway.
She clenched her jaw. An easy excuse. He read the ire in her eyes, and her disbelief.
Allow me to make it up to you.
He rose from his leather chair and strode around the desk. His long legs and years of training made his movements effortlessly graceful, even as he swiped a box off the edge of the table. He sank to one knee before her, his face near level with hers. She'd forgotten how tall he was. He extended the gift to her. The box in itself was a work of art, inlaid with mother-of-pearl. But she kept her face blank as she flipped open the lid. An emerald and gold brooch glittered in the gray afternoon light. It was stunning, the work of a master craftsman, and she instantly knew what dresses and tunics it would best complement. He'd bought it because he also knew her wardrobe, her tastes, everything about her. Of all the people in the world, only Aerobin knew the absolute truth.
For you, he said. The first of many.
She was keenly aware of each of his movements, and braced herself as he lifted a hand, carefully bringing it to her face. He brushed a finger from her temple down to the arc of her cheekbones.
I'm sorry,
he whispered again, and Selena raised her eyes to his. Father, brother, lover. He'd never really declared himself any of them. Certainly not the lover part, though if Selena had been another sort of girl, and if Aerobin had raised her differently, perhaps it might have come to that. He loved her like family, yet he put her in the most dangerous positions. He nurtured and educated her, yet he'd obliterated her innocence the first time he'd made her end a life. He'd given her everything, but he'd also taken everything away. She could no sooner sort out her feelings toward the King of the Assassins than she could count the stars in the sky. Selena turned her face away, and Aerobin rose to his feet. He leaned against the edge of the desk, smiling faintly at her.
I've another gift, if you'd like it.
All those months of daydreaming about leaving, about paying off her debts. Why couldn't she open her mouth and just tell him?
Benzo Donoval is coming to Rifthold,
Aerobin said. Selena cocked her head. She'd heard of Donoval. He was an immensely powerful businessman from Melisande, a country far to the southwest, and one of Otterlin's newer conquests.
Why?
She asked quietly, carefully. Aerobin's eyes glittered.
He's part of a large convoy that Leifer Bardengale is leading to the capital. Leifer is good friends with the former Queen of Melisande, who asked her to come here to plead their case before the King of Otterlin.
Melisande, Selena recalled, was one of the few kingdoms whose royal family had not been executed. Instead, they'd handed over their crowns and sworn loyalty to the King of Otterlin and his conquering legions. She couldn't tell what was worse, a quick beheading or yielding to the king.
Apparently,
Aerobin went on,
the convoy will attempt to demonstrate all that Melisande has to offer. Culture, goods, wealth. In order to convince the king to grant them the permission and resources required to build a road. Given that the young Queen of Melisande is now a mere figurehead, I'll admit that I'm impressed by her ambition and her brazenness in asking the king.
Selena bit her lip, visualizing the map of their continent. A road to connect Melisande to Fenharrow and Otterlin? For years, trade with Melisande had been tricky due to its location. Bordered by near-impassable mountains and the oak-walled forest, most of their trade had been reduced to whatever they could get out of their ports. A road might change all of that. A road could make Melisande rich and influential. Aerobin nodded.
The convoy will be here for a week, and they have parties and markets planned, including a gala 3 days from now to celebrate the harvest moon. Perhaps if the citizens of Rifthold fall in love with their goods, then the king will take their case seriously.
So what does Donoval have to do with the road?
Aerobin shrugged.
He's here to discuss business arrangements in Rifthold, and probably also to undermine his former wife, Leifer, and to complete one very specific piece of business that made Leifer want to dispatch him.
Selena's brows rose.
A gift, Aerobin had said. Donoval is traveling with some very sensitive documents,
Aerobin said so quietly that the rain lashing the window nearly drowned out his words.
Not only would you need to dispatch him, but you'd also be asked to retrieve the documents.
What sort of documents?
His silver eyes brightened. Donoval wants to set up a slave trade business between himself and someone in Rifthold. If the road is approved and built, he wants to be the first in Melisande to profit off the import and export of slaves. The documents, apparently, contain proof that certain influential Melisanders in Otterlin are opposed to the slave trade. Considering the lengths the King of Otterlin has already gone to punish those who speak against his policies, well, knowing who stands against him regarding the slaves, especially when it seems like they're taking steps to help free the slaves from his grasp, is information that the king would be extremely interested in learning. Donoval and his new business partner in Rifthold plan to use that list to blackmail those people into changing their minds, into stopping their resistance and investing with him to build the slave trade in Melisande. Or if they refuse, Leifer believes her former husband will make sure the king gets that list of names.
Selena swallowed hard. Was this a peace offering, then? Some indication that Aerobin actually had changed his mind about the slave trade and forgiven her for Skull's Bay? But to get tangled up in this sort of thing again. What's Bardengale's stake in this? She asked carefully. Why hire us to kill him?
Because Leifer doesn't believe in slavery, and she wants to protect the people on that list. People who are preparing to take the necessary steps to soften the blow of slavery in Melisande, and possibly even smuggle captured slaves to safety.
Aerobin spoke like he knew Bardengale personally, like they were more than business partners. And Donoval's partner in Rifthold, who is it? She had to consider all the angles before she accepted. Had to think it through.
Leifer doesn't know. Her sources haven't been able to find a name in Donoval's coded correspondences with his partner. All she's gleaned is that Donoval will exchange the documents with his new business partner 6 days from now, at his rented house, at some point in the day. She's uncertain what documents his partner is bringing to the table, but she's betting that it includes a list of important people opposed to slavery in Otterlin. Leifer says Donoval will probably have a private room in his house to do the swap. Perhaps an upstairs study or something of the sort. She knows him well enough to guarantee that.
She was beginning to see where this was going. Donoval was practically wrapped in a ribbon for her. All she had to do was find out what time the meeting would take place, learn his defenses, and figure out a way around them. So I'm not only to take out Donoval, but also to wait until he's done the exchange, so I can get his documents and whatever documents his partner brings to the table? Aerobin smiled slightly. What about his partner? Am I to dispatch this person as well? Aerobin's smile became a thin line.
Since we don't know who he'll be dealing with, you haven't been contracted to eliminate them. But it's been strongly hinted that Leifer and her allies want the contact dead as well. They might give you a bonus for it.
She studied the emerald brooch in her lap. And how well will this pay?
Extraordinarily well.
She heard the smile in his voice, but kept her attention on the lovely green jewel.
And I won't take a cut of it. It's all yours.
She raised her head at that. There was a glimmer of pleading in his eyes. Perhaps he truly was sorry for what he'd done. And perhaps he'd picked this mission just for her, to prove, in his way, that he understood why she'd freed those slaves in Skull's Bay. I can assume Donoval is well guarded?
Very,
Aerobin said, fishing a letter from the desk behind him.
He's waiting to do the deal until after the citywide celebrations, so he can run home the next day.
Selena glanced toward the ceiling, as if she could see through.